My dad always taught me this notion of location, location, location. Tiny, tiny hard disk that allow you to store a lot of data. Because of that success, I became more confident that I could figure this out. Helped me pay my bills. I finished med school, I graduated. So I learned R and a bunch of statistical programs. Simple problem of not having enough amount of manpower in our biostatistics department. Immediately after I graduated, got a research fellowship. So I used that tool and combined it with the machine learning model. In 2017, I had this opportunity of starting my own business. Artificial intelligence is no longer a computer science research problem. It has become more of a business problem. Industry in general started understanding how to manage this large amount of data sets more effectively. These tools called graphic processing units. Right around that period, Google released TensorFlow neural networks, and it never had an industry support. One of the consequences of having a framework that allows us to do graph computations more effectively is we can define these neural networks, quote-unquote AI, more efficiently. I said there is a market opportunity to provide infrastructure that's more effective. The value of space, since I've been living in New York, we have to define a server that occupies the least amount of footprint so that you can run these algorithms more effectively. Let's say classifying images or trying to come up with algorithms that understand language associated with that notion of deep learning or AI. The value addition comes in where one has to add the software that's optimized so that these hardware can run at its full capacity. They were planning on building a hedge fund and they wanted to have this device. I also run this large AI community called New York Health Artificial Intelligence Society. What a quantitative hedge fund does is they use a lot of data to derive insights on how to act on the market. Right? It's very similar where they take a lot of news feeds, use these AI algorithms to process the news feeds, work in cancer detection, especially in breast cancer detection. With this university consortium from European Union, small research grant, around 20% of our budget is used to do research. The startup to build out their deep neural network framework for understanding that international trade data. AB Monitoring Company helped develop their tools. Core team consists of three individuals. It's a very small team. I'm the hustler in the sense that I go out, I talk to people, I understand the business cases. So nobody's interested in just buying a server, they're interested in solving a problem. The bigger vision is to automate all of these and develop this into a platform. See this as an opportunity rather than competing against them. So as a company, our focus is in empowering those individuals. So we want to develop all the tools that are necessary for making their life easier. So we aren't necessarily focusing on just doing the one-off consulting, my business as a platform that empowers data scientists. So the more data scientists are there, the more potential customers are there for us. We want to do deep learning at scale. The cloud computing platform is called Jomiraki. My dream situation is using this platform associated with cancer care to near zero levels.
How, Rahul, would you say you have grown as an entrepreneur?
I'm involved in blockchain. We are developing a platform called Rattlesnake. It's useful for distributed data management. Learned humility. Need to be a little bit more humane in terms of once you're in this entrepreneurial journey, you have to make so many commitments to so many individuals. How to respect other people's time by making myself more organized. Mind about the whole thing in the sense that you have to let the customer know for sure. I believe I wouldn't learn that lesson if I were working for somebody else. So the ideal day starts with at least 8 hours of sleep.
Sure, me too.
Yeah.
Mode.computer.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Welcome to Startup Hunter, also streaming on YouTube.
Hello, Startup Hunters. Thank you guys so much for listening. This podcast would be nothing without you. And also, this podcast is a startup, so I need all the help that I can get. Would you please leave me a good review in the App Store? This would be huge. That's it. On to the episode.
I am here with Rahul Remanan from Mode Computer, and they are an actionable insights company. Think AI. Think data science. They have a product. They have a service. We're going to get into all that. And I don't know if you know, but on this show, I go all the way to the beginning.
Yeah.
So what I want to know is where were you born?
Yeah.
And what did your parents do?
Yeah. So I was born and brought up in India, in the southern part of India, a place called Kerala.
Of course, very famous.
Yeah, it's a famous place.
With the tea plantations?
With the tea plantations, with the beaches, and it's a very beautiful place, and I have fond memories of my childhood. My parents still live there. My parents, they are from an academic background. My dad, he was a lawyer, but he didn't like practicing law, so he shifted his career to becoming a professor at the university. He taught economics, especially from a tax point of view. My mom, she's also an academic background. She taught chemistry at the university. But right now, both of them are retired. So these days, my dad sort of manages some of our properties. So he dabbles in agriculture, so he does some farming and things like that. My mom, she learns music these days. So yeah, that's what a little bit about my parents.
Academic, maybe not too entrepreneurial.
Perhaps, but the interesting thing is that my dad always showed me, we had these very long conversations about what's a good business practice and how to run a great business. And he always had this intuition about real estate. So he started investing in real estate from a very early point
In India?
Yeah, in India. He's the person who taught me this notion of location, location, location.
Yes.
Yeah. So when we were first looking for a place in the city, we wanted to move from where we were living to the city. And because of his acumen in understanding undervalued properties, he found this under construction apartments. And he bought that, and now the value of the apartment has shot up so high. And now we have a subway system that's close by to the apartment. So it has become one of the prime properties in that area. He was able to sort of forecast how the market is going to be just based on these very simple principles. So
yes.
His idea was just use the notion of location and judge the value of the property based on that, you know?
So that is quite entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And then in your childhood,
yeah.
Do you remember doing things on your own? What was the first thing that you remember trying to sell?
Ah, interesting. Oh, wow. So when I was in med school. So in med school, what I did was, since I was very good with computers, and back then, India was still sort of figuring out a lot of these things. This was way back in the early 2000s. So I was running this small systems integration shop. I would create these tiny, tiny hard disks that allow you to store a lot of data, similar to how iTunes. And then I sold it to a bunch of friends in my university, and one of my best friends bought it. That would be my first success story in terms of a product. So this was essentially a portable device that where you could store a lot of these files. And
now, was it what you said you sold? Did you sell the product, or did you sell the company itself?
No. So the product was just the hard disk. So that's what I sold to my friends.
And how many of these units did you sell?
Oh, it wasn't that many. It's like four or five.
Still, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, did you give a good profit margin? Did you make money?
Yeah. So the devices itself were quite inexpensive. So all you need to do is just put them together. So yeah, it had decent enough amount of decent profit. But then because of that success, I became more confident that I could figure this out. What I ended up doing is I started doing consulting for a small company in New Delhi, where again, they were trying to build.
You went to medical school in Delhi?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that's another.
At IIT?
No. IIT was close to our campus. So I went to another school called All India Institute of Medical Sciences. There's a bunch of friends of mine who were doing this Linux-based firewalls for enterprises. So back then, Linux was a novelty. Most of the computing systems were based on Windows. So I had this expertise of deploying Linux-based systems. So what I ended up creating is a distribution, a configuration, a Linux-based OS that's primarily oriented towards managing the traffic. And that's the first successful business endeavor in the sense that it helped me pay my bills as well.
What was the name of it?
Yeah, it wasn't very formal in the sense that it was just me doing some consulting.
It was just Rahul's Linux.
Yeah, it's just the Ubuntu Linux. So back then, Ubuntu would sell, well, not sell, if you go to their Ubuntu website and you sign up for their distribution, they would email you their disk, and then you can reconfigure it and you can deploy it in your systems. So it was a very interesting
period back then. So you were just installing Linux on...
Yeah, installing Linux and configuring...
On businesses?
Yeah, yeah. So essentially helping them configure these firewalls, install Linux and configure their firewalls so that
So you were doing this while you were in med school?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you finish med school?
Yeah, I finished med school. I graduated in 2010. While I was in med school, I also did some work in scientific computing. So another good friend of mine, he's a neurologist now. We were doing a project in migraine.
In what?
In migraine headaches.
Yeah.
The interesting problem was that we didn't have enough amount of resources at the biostatistics department to help us with our data analytics. So I learned R and a bunch of statistical programs that allowed me to do the data analytics myself, which was probably the first exposure to data science in its early concepts, especially to help me understand how one would approach managing data and helping understand data. So R was introduced back then because I was so much involved in Linux. I was looking for a mechanism to analyze the data in a Linux platform. So that allowed me to learn R, because R is an open source platform. Back then it was becoming more and more popular. A lot of these organizations started using them right around 2005 or so. And by 2009 we had fairly good amount of support in terms of the packages that are needed to understand the data. Yeah, that simple problem of not having enough amount of manpower in our biostatistics department, the way in which I solved
so
this
there was,
is by, yeah.
There was demand there.
Yeah.
You saw a problem, you solved it.
Yeah.
And did I assume you just did it for the university, not for profit?
Yeah, it was done for our research project. So it was a project that me and my friend of mine, we collaborated on, and then we published it. We published the paper, more of a research project than a business project.
So did you ever go and become a practicing physician?
No. So immediately after I graduated, what I ended up doing is I got a research fellowship at one of the Cornell affiliated universities.
Here in the US?
Yeah, it's in the city. It's in the Upper East Side.
Okay, so you graduate and then you move to New York.
Yeah.
And you have a job doing research.
Yeah, yeah. So I did a research fellowship at this hospital system. The topic of the research fellowship was neurodegeneration. So essentially your brain starts aging faster than the rest of the body. And the disease model that I was specifically studying was this disease model called ALS, or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. So what I did there is combining a tool called transcranial magnetic stimulation. It allows us to functionally map the brain. It has multiple purposes, but one of the applications is it's useful to map the brain functionally. So I used that tool and combined it with a machine learning model to help physicians understand all of those complex data a little bit better, especially in the context of how much severity, what's the severity of the disease, what's the severity of the ALS, subject who is suffering from ALS. So that was my work. And then in 2017, I had this opportunity of starting my own business, partly because one of the big motivations for me was I saw the transition. So since I've been using these data science tools and AI tools for a fairly long period of time, and I've been in that scientific computing for a very long period of time, I saw that artificial intelligence is no longer a computer science research problem. It has become more of a business problem, right around 2016 or so. So
Why do you think made AI more catch on? Because in the 80s, there was a lot of emphasis, and people realized it was very difficult to make money on, so it sort of went away, not completely. But then you said, so what factors in 2016 do you think made AI pop?
So a lot of fundamental factors like how computers became more powerful contributed to this. But for my decision, industry in general started understanding how to manage this large amount of data sets more effectively. Right around 2010 or so, there was this huge revolution around big data. So the entire Silicon Valley and the whole computer ecosystem started evolving towards managing incredibly large amount of data sets. And then right around 2014 or so, these tools called graphic processing units, they became more and more effective in running these algorithms. And
so we're talking about graphics cards that, you know, for playing video games or for editing videos.
So they were typically used for playing games, but then very smart people at Department of Energy and at NVIDIA figured out that one could use these to run these run these AI algorithms faster. So what happened is right around 2014 or so, all of these devices became more accessible. And then in 2016, for me, the key decision-making factor was the software support. So right around that period, Google released TensorFlow. And that was a huge, huge game changer for me, because I was looking at all of these tools that are used to build neural networks, and it never had an industry support. And then Google came out and said, we are going to release this piece of software and we will support it, but it's all open source. So for me, that piece of software itself is an incredibly beneficial tool.
So what does TensorFlow do?
Yeah, so what is TensorFlow? So TensorFlow is this deep learning framework that allows us to do graph computations. So it doesn't necessarily have to deal with artificial intelligence or deep learning per se. You could do a lot of other stuff. One of the consequences of having a framework that allows us to do graph computations more effectively is we can define these neural networks, or quote unquote AI, more efficiently. So right now, the big application of TensorFlow is in building these industrial grade, production grade neural networks, right? But it has a lot of other applications too. For example, we can do.
Well, let's pause on that and come back to your business. So Google released TensorFlow.
Yeah.
It changes your game. How did you? What was the first thing you did with it?
Yeah, exactly. So the first thing that I did was I realized that there is a market opportunity to provide infrastructure that's more effective and efficient around these deep neural networks. So I built in a typical New York style. So I know the value of space since I've been living in New York for the past 9 years or so. I incredibly value space. I decided we have to design a server that occupies the least amount of footprint, but packs a very high amount of compute power so that it can run these algorithms more effectively. So that the product is available on our website, the very first iteration of the product. We released it in our website. And that's how the business started.
So you did this in 2016?
2017, at the beginning of 2017.
Okay, so you do a physical
server called Ada.
And what is the primary purpose? Why do you create your own server as opposed to just go to Dell or you know, some other computer manufacturer or just AWS, Amazon Cloud? Like why would people buy? You know, what was the main purpose of it?
Yeah, so the main purpose of it was to control the hardware specifications of how we can run these solutions. So we could go to Dell and we could buy the server, but again, there is this additional layer of complexity where we have to deploy the software that's optimized for that hardware.
Now, what is the primary purpose of the software, you know, the applications?
Yeah, so the applications are, again, trying to understand images, so let's say classifying images, or trying to come up with algorithms that understand language. It's all associated with that notion of deep learning or AI. So it's a software that's optimized to run AI more effectively. And one could buy these from the base hardware, one could buy from any other vendor because it's fairly commoditized. But then the value addition comes in where one has to add the software that's optimized so that this hardware can run at its full capacity, right? So if you just if you just install it in the easiest possible way, it doesn't necessarily take advantage of all the features that are available in your hardware. And now, if you don't control the underpinning hardware, now the other variation is you don't necessarily know what the exact specifications are going to be. So that was one of the big motivations, especially controlling the variants and also...
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so you build this, right?
Yeah.
And then did people buy it or did nobody buy it?
Yeah, so the very reason why I built it was because we have to have a customer. So the very first customer was this finance person and they were planning on building a hedge fund and they wanted to have this device. So what we
ended how did they know that they wanted your device?
Yeah, so the way in which I built this whole business was, first I started engaging with the community, right? So for folks who are unfamiliar with what I do, I also run this large AI community called New York Health Artificial Intelligence Society. So I started
which I've been to, and that's how I met you.
Yeah.
So and I know I can see the hustle mode.
Yeah,
it's fully active. You know, this guy's a hustler.
Yeah, for sure. So before I officially started the business, I started going to these meetups that are very much related to AI. And I started talking to people and I said, hey, by the way, I have this idea of making these algorithms run more effectively, more efficiently. Would you be interested in buying one? And I went around and talked to a lot of people. And eventually this person came to me and said, hey, by the way, we want this deployed in-house. And would you help us doing this, right?
Now, this is the finance hedge fund.
Yeah.
What was the task that your computer was set to?
Task was very simple. Optimize these deep neural networks against the hardware.
So what were the, like, I want to get a sense of what in hedge fund land world, you know, would need such heavy computation, you know, specialization.
Yeah, exactly. So there are different types of hedge funds, and one of the popular ones is this notion called a quantitative hedge fund. What a quantitative hedge fund does is they use a lot of data to derive insights on how to act on the market, right? So one of the applications is, let's assume that you have a Twitter feed.
And hold on just a sec. It's a little noisy.
Yeah.
All right. So. Quantitative hedge fund, with a Twitter feed.
Yeah, that's an interesting example, right? So for example, we have a bunch of large hedge funds that does something similar. For example, Two Sigma comes to my mind right away. They have a strategy that's very similar, where they take a lot of news feeds, use these AI algorithms to process the news feeds, and predict the market accordingly.
Wow.
Right? So in the traditional world of hedge funds, it's very human-driven process, but the industry is trying to shift towards more of data-oriented process. For example, a couple of years back, Ray Dalio, the person behind Bridgewater, he was talking about how Bridgewater should start defining an AI that mimics how their fund managers are making a decision. And then we have the great example of Renaissance Capital, which has been a quantitative hedge fund right from the beginning. And they are one of the pioneers in that field, in the sense that right from around the 90s or so, they started using these algorithmic approach of understanding their markets. And they are incredibly successful. And a more recent example is Two Sigma. So that industry is...
So this is really interesting, because here you are, you're starting in a medical space, and then you're seeing... you know, some traction in the financial space.
Yeah.
Do you even do medical applications anymore?
Yeah, absolutely. So since I have a healthcare background and I'm trained as a physician, healthcare is always really close to my heart. So one interesting work that I'm really proud of is our work in cancer detection, especially in breast cancer detection. So this is the commercial value of the project, again, is still unclear, because it started as a research project and it's an ongoing, it's still evolving quite a bit. But what we did as a company there is essentially collaborate with this what ended up happening is we collaborated with this university consortium from European Union, and they shared this data, and we used that data to build a set of machine vision tools using deep learning.
Now, did they pay you?
So it's a research project, so it was all self-funded by our own, we have a small research grant, around 20% of our budget is used to do research, so we use that research budget to do that. So that's why I said the business value of it is still unclear. The healthcare aspects of it is interesting to me in the sense that there are unique challenges with the industry. For example, the purchase cycle of these institutions are much bigger. So for example, like a typical organization, they will make a decision in 6 months or so, but health institutions take much longer to do that. And not only that, we have a lot of regulations associated with it. So starting with these basic research is a good segue. So the answer is no, we haven't been paid by any outside organizations to do this project. It's an internally funded project.
So has all of your business over the last 2 to 3 years come from finance companies?
No. So the interesting thing is, even though finance is one of the biggest verticals, there are other fields that are also adapting to this notion of incorporating data into the business. So one fascinating project that we did last year, well, at the beginning of this year, is in international trade. We helped a startup to build out their deep neural network framework for understanding that international trade data. We are also doing a project this is an ongoing project where we are helping this baby monitoring company help develop their tools to understand their video feeds better using AI. Again, privacy protection is really important there. So that's where our background in healthcare and AI is also useful for
them.
So
you say our, how many people are on your team?
Yeah, so the core team consists of 3 individuals. It's a very small team. And
yourself?
Yeah, myself, another person who is a process engineer, and a third person who is who has a chemistry background.
So you're the sales guy?
I'm the hustler in the sense that I go out, I talk to people, I understand the business cases, and I pitch these to say, hey, by the way, we have an incredible team. Please take a look at this and see what's happening, if you have something that's valuable there, you know, as a business.
So
yeah,
you sell a box, but you also do consulting.
Yeah. So the other interesting thing is, you can't just sell a single server or just a product and forget about it, in the sense that we have to provide end-to-end solutions to the customer. So the insight came out of a good friend of mine. So right towards the early stages of our business, when we were just starting out, brilliant person came out. He's again similar background, physician who transitioned himself to data science, and he provided this fantastic insight about end-to-end products, in the sense that nobody is interested in just buying a server; they are interested in solving a problem, and one should focus on providing solutions around it. And that gave me a brilliant idea of we should start doing software development as well as consulting services. That helped us win a lot more of these businesses. For example, lucrative business than just selling the hardware or than selling just the services around deep learning itself.
So do you have any vision for if you want to scale, if you want to try to scale into something, you know, more than just a one-off consulting shop?
And
really or are you not ready to do that yet?
So the bigger vision is to automate all of these and help develop this into a platform. So there are a bunch of ideas out there. So one big idea is to help data scientists work on these problems on their own. And then once they solve the problem, they can put these solutions into a very containerized sort of environment so that these applications will run on their own. So the data scientists don't have to worry about how the application is deployed to the end user. All they have to worry about is just coming up with a solution. So that's a that's the bigger goal of our services part of our business, in the sense that eventually we want to build, we are building that tool step by step, but that's how it will be in the next couple of years, essentially.
So would you have any desire to accelerate that process?
Absolutely.
Pitch that thesis to capitalists so that you have some extra resources to do that faster?
Absolutely, absolutely.
But are you actively pitching or?
Yeah. So right now, we talk to investors, but it's not a huge priority for me. For me, the priority is business development and acquiring more customers, because we raised some initial funds at the early stage of the company.
What investor?
It was privately funded. It was all funded through friends and family. So that allowed us to have a headroom for us to do all of these interesting projects. And over a period of time, during the 2 years of existence, we have made profit. But that's enough for us to sustain our business. But I understand it. So if I want to scale it up, I will have to talk to investors. And if there are individuals out there, so I constantly talk to a lot of people. So for example, I was chatting with this venture capitalist about how some of these ideas can be used to tackle the opioid epidemic, right? But the interesting thing is all of these require time. And I see this as an organic process, rather than saying, hey, by the way, I'm going to just focus on raising the money. But I believe that's a very short-sighted mechanism of running a business, because you have to focus on growing the business. And once investors comes in, I would say, yeah, that's fine. We have these incredible ideas. We can collaborate on it and grow this using that venture capital route. But I see this more of a business development side. I don't focus that much amount in terms of raising money, which is interesting in the sense that many people in the startup world typically focus on just raising money. But for me,
I wouldn't say typically. I mean,
yeah,
there's risk in raising money.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
risk in failure.
Yeah,
playing it safe, yeah. like you is
for
you
sure.
don't have these big. Investors to be accountable to in these.
But accountability, again, so for me, accountability is a key of how businesses should be run, in the sense that one has to be transparent about how you operate, and it works in both ways, in the sense that having an investor, having a person supporting your vision is going to be beneficial. That's why I said I'm more pragmatic. If somebody is interested in investing in my idea, in our vision as this enterprise AI company, I'm open to talking to them, but that's not our primary focus. Our primary focus is in helping businesses understand the data and helping grow that business in a meaningful way.
Okay, so let's take it from another angle. There's
yeah.
so many quote-unquote data scientists
yeah,
these
yeah.
days. You know, data science is all the rage.
Yeah.
And how do you compete everything out there,
yeah.
whether it's people who hire their own data scientists
yeah.
or, you know, other data science startups and companies? How do you view the landscape?
Yeah, yeah. So I see this as an opportunity rather than competing against them. So as a company, our focus is in empowering those individuals. So we want to develop all the tools that are necessary for making their life easier. So we aren't necessarily focusing on just doing the one-off consulting. We because of our interest in infrastructure and services and our broader goal as an actionable insights company, we want to empower these data scientists in how they are doing analytics. For example, the basic research that we are doing around quantifying uncertainty and how we understand these data sets effectively, all of this will be beneficial in the long run for how data scientists are going to do their job. I see my business as a platform that empowers data scientists. So the more data scientists are there, the more potential customers are there for us.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Especially the infrastructure side of things, the cloud computing side of things, people will see value in these platforms, and I can sell more because I have a larger cohort of people who understand these technologies, you know.
So you view it as an opportunity more than anything?
Yeah, absolutely, in the sense that especially the requirement for a GPU optimized server, it's a tiny, tiny field right now. But if companies want to do deep learning at scale, you have to go down that route. The marriage between public cloud and private infrastructure is the best way to go. We have that interesting advantage in the market. We have figured out how to deploy these tools in a very user-friendly way. And once that market grows, we will be part of that success. So that's how I see them.
So yeah. Let's talk a moonshot, yeah. Right? If you could, what would be your dream scenario as far as like the kinds of customers using your platform?
Yeah.
And what's the name of your platform?
Yeah.
So is it just Mode, or isn't there a name I saw like with a J?
Yeah, Jomiraki. So the name of the cloud computing platform is called Jomiraki. It's not just a private cloud. We also deploy that Jomiraki layer on our service as well. And what that does is it gives a unified mechanism of accessing these data science tools in a browser.
So what would your dream situation be?
Yeah, so my dream situation is using this platform to develop cancer therapeutics that can reduce the mortality rates associated with cancer care to near zero levels. Very long-term vision of where this platform should be in my ideal world.
Now, like, are you open to, what happens if just hedge funds and finance companies, you know, completely dominate your business and then cancer, you just can't even do it?
Yeah. So that's where the research portion comes in, right? That 20% of the budget, it helps us chip away that tiny bit of, we could invest tiny, tiny sums so that we can be a little bit closer to that bigger vision. So I'm okay to, so financial institutions again are very important in terms of the impact, right? So for me, healthcare is really important, but having finance customers is really, really beneficial because they understand these tools, they know how to work with these tools, and they understand the importance of these kind of leading edge technologies. It becomes a very easier sell to financial institutions than anybody else. So I see this as an empowering opportunity as a business. I don't necessarily see it as a bad thing. But because of our ability to do some research along with our product portfolio, eventually we will get there.
A question that I ask everyone on this show.
Yeah.
So how, Rahul, would you say you have grown as an entrepreneur in the last few years? In what ways?
Yeah. Two big things. One is I learned humility, and
now,
the other.
How? Talk about that. Go. Let's go into a little depth. Like, were you cocky? Were you arrogant? Or was it something else?
Entrepreneurship is always about a vision and bringing that vision to life. But what's interesting is if you are part of that nitty-gritty, that daily journey of how to build a business, you suddenly realize that a lot of your assumptions are. Sometimes they need reevaluation. You need to be a little bit more humane in terms of how you deal with people. So for example, a great example is how I schedule things out. So typically what happens is before I saw myself as an entrepreneur, I had a very haphazard mechanism of scheduling out my day, and I never paid too much attention around it. Once you're in this entrepreneurial journey, you have to make so many commitments to so many individuals, and you have to live up to those commitments as well. So it became very important for me that I had to figure out how to respect other people's time by making myself more organized, right? So that stemmed from the humility in the sense that I want to be humble in terms of respecting other people's time. I don't want them to be frustrated by missed appointments or late appointments. And the way in which I figured it out is by scheduling out everything in a calendar so that I will be there on time and I will fulfill the meetings that I'm supposed to be there, right? So as an individual, it taught me a lot about how to deal with people, especially in terms of how to manage expectations, how to be on time. These are very subtle things that are that I never paid attention to. Now I pay very conscious attention to, especially in terms of from a context of business, in the sense that if I say this will be done by so and so, I typically ensure that there is a step-by-step approach of how it can be done, and I deliver on it. A great example is the project that we recently did, one of the consulting projects that we did. But the way in which I approached it is I broke it down into 10 different steps, and I allocated specific amount of time to solve each of those 10 steps. And in the end, we completed that project on time, around 2 hours ahead of the schedule. And I'm really proud of that, in the sense that the old me would have taken a more laissez-faire approach towards it. But because we have this mission of delivering on the promises as a business, it helped me grow as an individual.
Well, as when you run your own business, you mess up, that's your profit and your ability to pay your rent on the line.
Yep.
Whereas if you're working for somebody else and you mess up, I don't think the consequences are necessarily as high.
Yeah. And not only that, you have to be very kind about the whole thing, in the sense that you have to let the customer know for sure that you need to have these 10 steps in place as well. So it's not just about me having a plan. It's also me trying to be upfront about the requirements on my end as well. I have to be open to the customer as well, in the sense that I have to tell them, in order to accomplish this amount of things, I need to go through these steps, and I need this amount of time. And I have to be very, very honest about it. And if I overpromise it, then that's also going to be a problem, in the sense that, and that's where that kindness comes in the sense that you have to think about it, you have to be empathetic from a customer point of view, how much of the resources that I need from them, as well as what my limitations are, and working within that context, you know. That's something that's incredibly new to me. I believe that's unique to entrepreneurship, in the sense that if you're working on a traditional 9-to-5 job, you have some leeway of how you manage all of those things, because you're essentially working for somebody rather than for yourself. But having that accountability is going to be useful no matter what profession you are in. I believe I wouldn't learn that lesson if I were working for somebody else, or if I was doing something completely altogether different. But that entrepreneurial journey helped me sort of empathize with the customer, being kind to them, and articulate properly what the resources I need on behalf of them.
All right.
Yeah.
So break down your day for me. What's a typical day for you, where you feel I give myself sometimes a grade on my day.
Yeah.
And if I'm fooling myself, right? If I spend an hour playing video games in one day because it relaxes me and it comes, maybe I will degrade myself from a B plus to a C plus. So in your ideal day, what's your ideal day?
Well, the ideal day starts with at least 8 hours of sleep.
Sure, me too.
Yeah. And then I want to commit the first few hours of the day solving the hardest problems that I encountered from the day before or that was in the past. So for example, if I'm developing a piece of software, or we are in the process of developing a software, I want to make sure I have full concentration, mentally challenging or very thought intensive process.
Do you find your brain power is just more focused in the morning?
Yeah, for me that's how it works.
Me too.
Yeah, I wake up in the morning and I want to commit at least 2 hours to the most challenging problems. And that's where my productivity is the highest. And then right towards the afternoon, I would schedule a couple of meetings so that I can reach out to individuals and see how they are doing and all of those stuff. And then right towards the tail end, I spend some time watching some new stuff in the field, reading through the news, following what the recent developments in technology is. That's how my typical workday is. And then afterwards, right around 5 or 6 or so, I start focusing more of my personal life, where I would start checking on my Instagram, I would start texting my friends.
What about your networking?
Yeah, yeah. And then right around like 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock or so, once I am done with my social commitments, I start doing the networking stuff, where I would start hosting these meetings in the evening, so that I no longer have the stress of the workday. Now I'm freed of all of the stress because I already took care of it ahead of time. And now I'm free to chat with similar-minded individuals who are passionate about the field and talk to them and see what their ideas are and how I can help them.
Okay, one other curveball for you and the final question.
Yeah, yeah.
We met at a blockchain event, EOS.
Yeah, yeah, at Amazon, yeah.
How does blockchain intersect your world, or are you just starting to make forays into it?
Wow. So there are two interesting ways in which I'm involved in blockchain. One is in data management. So we are developing a platform called Rattlesnake. It's useful for distributed data management. Because mind you, one of the interesting challenges in health and medicine in general is how do we manage this data in a secure, scalable fashion. So I'm using this notion of key management on blockchain to do that.
Yeah.
The second
I want to sit.
yeah, please do. The second one is in gaming. So I put together a small team of people who is interested in developing a blockchain gaming platform.
Yeah.
It's called Kendama. It's very early stage. I haven't done much in terms of the product development. So we are talking to VCs, we are talking to investors about how much interest is there in an idea like this.
Now, is it leveraging all of your data science expertise, or is this totally in a different direction?
So there is a component of AI involved. The way in which the platform authenticates users is it's similar to an iPhone, but it uses a transparent, so the authentication layer will be built on top of Linux. So imagine you have a facial recognition system on a Linux platform. So that's how I envision it. So that's where the AI comes in. But mostly this is just a gaming project. It has nothing to do with data or AI in its core.
Yeah.
It's all about creating a more unified gaming experience using blockchain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you are, you know, hustling and doing whatever it takes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm a hustler, man.
To keep your fire going.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you said, piecemeal, slowly and surely, maybe, you know, I think it's just like the industry as a whole, you know, from 1996 to 2014, as you say.
Yeah.
Maybe the industry and the world was just building, solving certain problems first, and then those problems became easy. 2014,
right.
Data science became the new problem.
Right.
And I think maybe that's a microcosm for you. You know, maybe you're solving the basic problems in your domain at
right.
first, and soon enough those would become, you know, so easy that you, you know, you can continue making your platform bigger.
Yeah. Identify your niche and the niche becomes mainstream, you know?
Yeah?
Yeah.
So thank you so much for coming on,
yeah,
Rahul.
Yeah.
Go check out mode.computer.
Yeah, please. Yeah, please do. That's our website, mode.computer.
And this will be sent out on lots of social networks, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, audio, YouTube.
Yeah. Please check out all of those platforms. And Hundra has been very, very passionate about understanding the startup ecosystem in New York. And when I first met him, I didn't realize what he did, but now I have a very clear-cut understanding of what Hundra is up to. And I really enjoyed it. I'm a person who loves walking, and so this is the best way to do an interview, and I really enjoyed this.
And I enjoy walking too. It's my elevator's broken, so my legs are, I lugged about 100 pounds up five flights of stairs.
Yeah.
So my legs are really sore.
Yeah.
But, you know, normally I love walking.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah.